The Budget Subcommittee on Human Services will come to order. Before we any further go, we're going to do a total room exercise, okay? Today is Phyllis, our 80th birthday, so we're singing happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Phyllis. Happy birthday to you.
Kate Brown's same birthday.
That's right. Today is Senator Brown's birthday, too, so happy birthday for her as well.
I'm not singing.
You're not singing? Oh, thank God for that.
But I'm eating her ice cream.
Oh. Thank you very much. Mr. Baker, we are today having a work session on Senate Bill 5600, Department of Human Services, Children, Adults, and Families, and possible public hearing and possible work session. So it depends on Senate Bill 7048 later. What we want to do is spend about the first hour, if needed, on Senate Bill 5600, and then if some time is left, go to Senate Bill 7048. So that's my plan, and I would hope that if we can get to it, we can. But if not, I want to spend as much time as we need to have on Senate Bill 5600. Any other comments before Ms. Baker start bringing us up to date? Thank you very much, Ms. Baker.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. I handed out to you a revised spreadsheet because one of the explanations was missing on the earlier one that you got. The numbers have not changed. And then you also have a policy package summary for the Children, Adults, and Families budget in Department of Human Services as well. And we'll talk about those as we go through this. I will work from the memo, from the spreadsheet, and then a few references probably to the policy package summary. But this is the second work session on the Department of Human Services new budget bill, the Senate Bill 5600. You did department-wide support services yesterday, children, adults, and families today. The expectation is health services next Monday, and then senior and people's disabilities next Tuesday. So, children, adults, and families, on the memo, you can see the comparative budgets from 0103 actual, 0305 legislative approved, the initial governor's recommended, and then the LFO recommended budgets. I would note that because of some restructuring that was done with the reorganization in the prior budget years, that it's not necessarily an apples-to-apples comparison because some of the staffing for senior and people with disabilities was included with the staffing for Children, Adults, and Families program in the current budget structure for Community Human Services, which goes away for 0507. That being said, we've tried to make them as comparative as possible, but I just wanted to make you aware of that little anomaly. In terms of the recommended budget, you can note that the biggest increase is in the federal funds non-limited amount, over $100 million. That federal funds non-limited for children, adults, and families is food stamp benefits. So there's no general fund match required for those benefits. It's purely federal fund. I will note that on the staffing piece and determine eligibility for that program, there is a 50-50 general fund, federal fund match, but in terms of the benefits, it's purely federal funds, non-limited.
Oh, while you're doing that, I'd like the record to reflect that Senator Monis Anderson had a family emergency and had to leave, and Senator Winters, when we get ready to vote, she's kind of under the weather, and she'll come down.
In terms of the general fund increase from 0305 to 0507, The major elements, major cost drivers in this budget, as we heard during the joint subcommittee discussions, are mandated caseload growth. There's in foster care, adoptions assistance, there is mandated caseload, inflation, and then there's a significant fund shift, some federal funds that were available for 0305 that are not expected to be available in 0507. We've used general fund backfill.
So Ms. Baker, I'm sorry. So under the 0507, under the other funds, there is a decrease from 0103, and oh, I see, 10305 is down, and then there's an increase of 100 million. Gotcha. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. So we will walk through the, as we did with department-wide support services, we'll walk through our preliminary adjustments to the governor's budget to get you to the LFO recommendation. And those adjustments would include the reshoot adjustments, the repricing of the governor's budget, again, updated program caseload cost and revenue estimation, some changes in some of the policy packages in the governor's budget, and technical adjustments and transfers. And I would note that yesterday when you saw a large increase in the department-wide support services budget for those technical adjustments and transfers, today you'll see a significant decrease in this budget as a result of that. But again, there's no net general fund or total funds position impact to the department as a whole from those technical adjustments and transfers. We will adjust for the PERS rate reduction and the reduction in the Department of Justice Attorney General rate. And then the Senate budget takes a number of actions that add back program reductions that were made in the governor's budget. The Senate budget also eliminates the policy package to increase Attorney General representation for child welfare workers. It reduces general fund services and supplies by 2%, and then additionally delays the cost of living adjustment to July 2006. The governor's budget delayed it to January. The Senate budget delays it to July 2006. And I'll talk about that a little more as we see that on the spreadsheet. And then another adjustment in part to address the elimination of the policy package for the Attorney General representation. There's a recommendation to establish a $2.5 million special purpose appropriation to the Emergency Board for the purposes of the child welfare staffing and legal representation issues. The agency and Department of Justice did send a revised plan for that. We received it on Friday, so there hasn't been time to look at it or for people to talk about it or get any agreement on the approach or the costs of that. And so the idea is with the special purpose appropriation, there's money set aside for that. People can take their time and look at it and agree on an approach, and then the agency would come to the emergency board for that funding. Any matching other funds and federal funds could be expenditure limitation could be increased at that time for the department, and similarly what the Department of Justice might need in terms of expenditure limitation could also be increased because their package's relationship to the DHS package is that the DHS money would pay for those attorneys in DOJ, so DOJ doesn't have general fund that they would need appropriated, but they would need expenditure limitation if the revised plan includes attorneys in Department of Justice. And there's
I read that proposal, I think, last night, the first time it came in after I left on Friday. The proposal, I think, cuts the cost about in half, but it's still at about $4 to $5 million, if I remember right. Is that correct?
The general fund cost, I believe, is about $2.3 million.
So that was including match money then?
Well, the $2.3 million is just the general fund. Your total number would include some match.
Okay, so this limitation is adequate if we decide to go forward with the program as outlined by the Attorney General.
Right, that would be my understanding.
Okay, thanks.
The $2.5 million would cover what the cost of that revised proposal
are. Thank you.
But our proposal still does not address the issue that the department would like to see addressed, and that is the issue of attorneys representing kids versus social workers or caseworkers.
Right. I think isn't this partially the way I read the proposal was the very high risk cases are the ones they wanted to be sure were covered with this, and the lower risk cases they were going to be handled another way. But it was still just a proposal that's just fresh out of the box, and we haven't had a chance to really vet it or think about it. And that's what I think we're trying to drive to.
Yes.
Do you understand the memorandum I read it correctly then?
The way I looked at it very quickly was that they established tighter criteria for which cases would get Attorney General representation, but yes, there would still be attorney representation for some of those caseworkers. And the the issues with the initial package seemed to be, first, there was some discomfort with the level of funding, given that it only addressed a small percentage of the cases that initially felt or would presumably need to have some representation if all things were equal and we have unlimited funding. So it only addressed a part of the need with the potential for a much greater cost later on. And then I think there was some concern as well about how well does this address the workload issues for the caseworkers. And so those issues, I don't know if the revised proposal resolves the concerns that there were with the initial proposal.
Thank you for that long explanation, but it was important to the agency, and you're right, and I'm not sure the proposal is going to resolve the issue or not. I still know. So.
Well, actually, it's a matter of cost right now, even though we did know in looking at this piece that taking a caseworkers off their daily loads does give them a little more work to do, but when you can compare that to the cost of having attorney representation versus caseworkers doing some of the representation of those less, you know, high-risk kids.
Right.
That's the way to think about it.
I understand that.
Given a different budget environment, we'd be doing
it. Might do it differently.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Thank you, Ms. Baker.
And I would note, as I note in my memo, that there are additional program needs that the department has identified that aren't funded in the governor's, that weren't funded in the governor's budget, aren't funded in the reshoot budget, and aren't funded at this point in the Senate budget plan. And I'll talk about those as we go through the spreadsheet as well. So I will, if there's no questions on that sort of overview, then I'll walk really quickly and stop me when you have questions on the spreadsheet.
That'll be great, because I'm sure Senator Westman might have some questions, and he needs to go. And oh, you need to go in 5 minutes, so
I do?
I do.
You do?
Yeah, but it'll only take me 5 minutes. I'll be right back.
Okay.
I have to testify the defibrillator thing.
Okay. So I'll take a long time working through this.
Take 20 or 30 minutes. That's okay.
Yeah. He thinks that with this end, at least, then.
Don't forget, Senator, he has gold rules, and I do believe in marking absence.
Well, when he leaves, he'll be absent. Then do your list.
Okay, turning to the spreadsheet, and the one that I handed out in front of you is the one that has the explanation that was missing on the earlier copy that you received. Same format as you saw yesterday, starting with from the governor's recommended budget. The first page shows the agency reshoot request issues for children, adults, and families. Lines 2 and 3 reflect the federal funds' non-limited projected caseload growth in the food stamps programs, both food stamps related to children and families and then food stamps in the senior and people with disabilities caseloads. Line 4 is a food stamp penalty that we have been assessed for federal fiscal year 2002. And I would note that although the agency has put some significant effort into improving its food stamp error rates, other states have decreased their error rates as well. And so this is one of those things that you're not measured only on how much your performance has changed, but also on how it has changed relative to other states. And so we have a penalty there that is a general fund cost. Line 5.
Oh, hold on. $619,000 general fund and some other total funds?
It's $619,000. It's all general fund because presumably they won't let us match with federal funds what we have to pay the penalty.
Mm.
All comes out of our
pocket. Is that case?
In the past, as we were ramping this up and had the errors, they let us use what we would have been the penalty to help train our workers to have less error. Are they actually asking for cash back now?
They're asking, Mr. Chair, or
whoever I am.
Yes, whoever. The $619,000 is a cash payment this time around. You're right. In previous years, we were able to negotiate with the feds about reinvesting that penalty into additional training and other improvements. There is a possibility for future years, if we're in a penalty situation, that we would be able to do that again. But for 2002, this is the cash payment that we need to make.
So is there a training program still going on in the department for this?
I think the agency would be better able to answer that. I know that they have been working very hard on this issue, and I have some staff that has gone out into the individual branch offices to both train people, and then I believe they still have an ongoing review function where they have people identified to review the applications and work one-on-one if need be with the staff, that if there's one staff person or several staff people that need additional training to increase their performance overall. So I think this is an ongoing effort, the food stamp error rate improvement. I would also note that it's not just a matter of whether someone is eligible or not eligible and you get penalized if you go the wrong way, but it's also a matter of degrees of eligibility for benefits. So even if someone is eligible, if you give them too much in food stamps or too little in food stamps, then that's still counted as an error for purposes of the error rate.
Senator Westman.
And then, Madam Chair, if I could point out, and I think this is where Dr. Bates was going, this is almost the result of a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you look at the date, 2002, and it was back in the 99 interim that I can remember this first coming to our attention in fairly dramatic fashion as having the highest hunger quotient, I think we called it back then, and then in the nation. It was all due to the food stamp program that wasn't working quite right, so we all hurry up and into a cauldron of chaos throw a bunch of workers, some not perhaps as trained as well as they should have, but put there with the best of intentions, and then as the other state's error rate just improved a little bit and we put new workers in that were understandably making additional errors, our error rate didn't improve as fast as the other states, even though we were trying hard. So this is a reflection, I think, of water that's passed under the bridge several years ago, and I would expect to not see again based on the good efforts of the agency. That's where we are. Still $619,000, but that's how we got here.
I mean, I hate to see that kind of penalty have to be paid, but I understand where it came from. But, it's so counterproductive. You cut that kind of money out, you have less money for your workers, you're more likely to make errors. This is a program that also is already terribly expensive as far as overhead is concerned because of eligibility things you have to do to get food stamps out. It's just the whole thing's counterproductive. I hate to see it, but we want to continue the program, we pay the penalty, we move on and make sure it doesn't happen again.
So, Mr. Johnson. What are we doing, or what are you doing in the department to help eliminate these kind of errors?
I just met Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Johnson, Interim Director of the Oregon Department of Human Services. And I just met with Alan Ng, who is the federal representative for this program for our region, and he has suggested that we go to two sites in our region that have had worse records than ours and have done the requisite improvement. By the way, once we get to 6% in error rate, we will not be penalized no matter what happens to the other states. Our difficulty right now is that although we made significant improvement, the other states, the goal line moved. The other states made more improvement, and so even our significant improvement wasn't enough. He suggests that we send some of our people to the Los Angeles Social Service Office and the Fairbanks Social Service Office. I'm likely to do at least one of those, and for the purpose of observing how they run their review panels and how they select out their offices, and that's what we're going to have to do to improve the situation. And Senator Bates, if I may, although this penalty, the dollar amount of this penalty was a negotiated amount, which where we had previously agreed that we would pay this penalty if we didn't, improve to a certain rate. The federal government is still willing to entertain some conversation with us. As I said, I just met with him, and I promised him that by July 1, he would have an outline from us as to what we might do in the alternative. He didn't lead me to believe that they would be quite as reasonable as they were last time, but that some possibility still existed.
And, Madam Chair, if I could just point out, Director Johnston has invited me to go on the Fairbanks trip, and our plane leaves in half an hour.
So yeah, right.
We could be excused.
Line 5 on the spreadsheet relates to a reclassification of TANF case managers to social service specialist 3s. This was partially in process, but was also a finding of the staffing study, at least the initial findings of the staffing study that was done, that based on current case standards, there were more positions classified as TANF case managers when, in fact, there were not enough eligibility workers for food stamps and Medicaid. And although some of the case managers were picking up that eligibility work out in the field, this aligns those positions to more closely reflect what needs to happen in terms of the position responsibilities. There's just a little bit of savings because the two position classifications overlap, and so it's not like you're eliminating entire positions. It's just an adjustment in the top-level funding, but there is some savings there, and it does support or reflect what one of the findings of the staffing study was. Line 6 is additional federal funding for the Refugee Assistance Program. This program is 100% federal funds, and so there's $2 million additional available. Line 7 relates to renewal of our Child Welfare Title IV-E waiver. We have a waiver that the federal government allows us to use our foster care and adoptions assistance federal money in a more flexible way to help prevent some youth from going into foster care or from staying in foster care longer. One requirement of that waiver is that there be an evaluation that's contracted with for Portland State University. Because the waiver had expired, there wasn't enough funding in the budget, built into the budget, for that evaluation cost, and so it's added in here with the waiver renewal approval. Line 8 is savings based on the adoptions assistance and some other programs, some adjustments. Adoptions assistance is one of the mandated caseloads in the current service level or essential budget level budget. There was about $13 million general fund additional built in for adoption assistance based on projected caseloads at that time. It looks like now that the levels will be a little bit lower than had been projected then, and so there's some general fund and other savings there. I do note that the federal funds decrease is net of federal funds add for post-adoption support. So there's some additional federal funds for helping keep adoptive placements from going south, I guess is the best way to put it. Line 9 is the adjustment in the Medicaid and the foster care and adoption assistance match rates, the federal match rates. We talked about that a little bit yesterday with department-wide support services. That saves general fund and increases federal fund in this budget. Line 10 is a correction that's carried forward from the recent rebalance, House Bill 5077, that you approved. There was some empty other fund limitation, but the revenues were needed, and so it was backfilled with general fund. That 0305 adjustment carries forward into the 0507 budget period as well. Lines 11 and 12 relate to vocational rehabilitation services. Line 11 is an additional federal grant for competitive employment that the agency has received. The grant application approval was approved by the emergency board in June of 2004, and so they have been awarded the grant, and the federal funds limitation is included here. Line 12 is a significant federal funds expenditure limitation increase. This is additional federal funds that vocational rehabilitation has identified over time as being available. It's money that's already been matched with general fund, but we hadn't spent the federal funds. And so the proposal here is to use this as a one-time enhancement of expenditures, some of it going to serve clients that would otherwise not be able to be served, and some of it used to work with community partners to leverage particular projects, still for vocational rehabilitation clients, but with the end goal of being able to help you help provide some other funds that can be used as matching funds for federal funds in the future for ongoing services. Okay, then going down into the package adjustments, line 13, when the agency carried forward the adjustments from their November 2004 budget rebalance, there was some other fund limitation that had been eliminated there that didn't get carried forward into the governor's budget, and so that's a $3 million other fund reduction. Its Child Care and Development Fund was the original expected source, but that limitation was there and the revenue wasn't, so it was backed out. The next four lines relate to the governor's budget reductions in the 090 package. The first one, there is no expenditure impact from that, but I wanted to note it because the governor's budget originally anticipated that there would be a total of $3.4 million transferred from the Jobs Plus individual education account balances and the law enforcement medical liability account balances. So funds that were deemed to be available from those program accounts would be transferred. It needs a statutory transfer to do that, and so that will show up in a program bill this session. But the idea would be to transfer those balances and use it to replace general fund in this budget. And so in looking at that balance and what the governor's budget anticipated for the Jobs Plus individual education accounts, in addition to the transfer to DHS, there was a $300,000 transfer assumed to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. There wasn't enough in that account to do both of those transfers, so the Oregon Student Assistance Commission transfer will happen. The DHS transfer will happen, but at a $300,000 lower level. There is enough in the law enforcement medical liability account balance to make up that $300,000 difference. So there's no hole in this budget. It's just a different amount of money coming from each of those funds.
Madam Chair.
Senator Baker. Westman.
Could Sheila go back up to line 13 where, with the Department of Corrections, we take $72 million and put it into the commission budget?
Ben, please do not, audience, do not. Don't go there with him. He's just trying to find out if you were listening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we take a vote on that, Madam Chair?
Okay, line 15 is to remove federal funds limitation that matches a general fund reduction in the food stamp employment and training program. So when the governor's budget reduced the general fund, there also should have been $1 million federal fund limitation coming out, and that didn't happen. So that corrects for that. Line 16, there was a reduction in Portland State University research funding that's related to the child welfare programs that needed to be repriced. That is not related to the waiver evaluation that we talked about above, but in this instance, with the repricing, it saves an additional amount of general fund.
But talk to me again. So this means that 727 were general fund savings from PSU?
No, line 16,
yeah.
Madam Chair, is an additional general fund reduction of 189,111.
Yeah.
The 727 relates to line 17.
Sorry. I'm sorry, but the line 16, so is that money that we got back or we had to pay addition to?
Madam Chair, that's an additional reduction, so that's that much less money we're paying out to Portland State University.
I love it. Thank you.
Line 17, this is a correction to a reduction in the governor's budget for the vocational rehabilitation programs. The intention in the governor's budget originally was to cut the funding for those services by 20%. In fact, the amount that came out was about 32%, and so this adds back in enough to make it only a 20% reduction. Now, as part of the Senate budget plan, you restore the $1.7 million in special payments reductions in the governor's budget anyway, so this $700,000 was part of what you intended to restore. It's just that they took care of it, that part of it, in the reshoot.
Madam Chair,
we'll get to the other million later.
Well, maybe that's the other million. Sheila, in the Boak Rehab and some of the residential treatment facilities, do we address anything in here with regard to the COLAs? Or maybe you just want to get to it.
Madam Chair and Representative Westland, in the Senate plan, there is an additional reduction in the cost of living adjustment, and we can talk to that. We'll get there. Line 18 is an increase in the governor's budget package for Medicaid quality control reviews. As we talked about in the department-wide support services budget yesterday, this is a new federal requirement in terms of reviewing cases that have Medicaid funding tied to them. And based on what other states have been doing, it's expected to cost more and take more staff than DHS had originally anticipated. So that package is increased in this reshoot. And in the policy package summary that I handed out, you can see what the net effect of those adjustments are on that package. Package 129, which is towards the bottom, well, the last package on that page before the total lines, went from being a $747,000 total funds package to a $1.2 million total funds package, and from 7 positions expected to 12 now. So it is a significant increase, but there's significant workload expected to be involved with that federal mandate. So back on the spreadsheet now, line 19 reflects other technical adjustments and transfers. And if you remember yesterday from department-wide support services, there was a significant increase in their budget. Here you see a significant decrease in this budget because there are 136 positions and related costs transferring out of children, adults, and families budget. Now, 80 of those relate to the consolidation of the collection and recovery program in DWSS, but there are additional other positions transferring out as well. So it was significant increase yesterday in department-wide support services, significant reduction here in this one. Again, department-wide, no net effect from those technical adjustments and transfers. So that was the agency's reshoot request budget. Page 2 shows the adjustments that we would recommend to this budget based on the Senate budget plan. Lines 21 and 22 are the standard reductions based on the PERS rate changes and the Attorney General rate reduction. Line 23 adds general fund to replace an expected $1.2 million in tobacco tax revenue that was built into the budget, but in fact, once Office of Medical Assistance Programs accounts for all of their needed expenditures, and they use up all the dedicated tobacco tax revenue, and so there's not $1.2 million in revenue in the CAF budget, so we've used general fund to replace that. Lines 24, 25, and 27 are all similar adjustments. There's a small net general fund increase, but the issue here is that in building the budget and looking at where the caseload increases and decreases are, the executive branch budget instructions identify as mandated caseload in this budget foster care, supportive remedial daycare as related to foster care, and then adoptions assistance. And so to to adjust for what was in the reshoot in terms of pluses and minuses in the mandated caseload programs, that's what lines 24, 25, and 27 do. So it just trues up the policy, if you will, with the budget numbers. And we can go to it now. On page 3, you can see what's considered to be non-mandated caseload for purposes of the budget. Just because something is labeled as mandated or non-mandated for budget purposes doesn't guarantee funding or guarantee not funding in the budget process. But what has in fact happened during this budget building is that these programs, the TANF, employment-related daycare, a couple of child safety programs, some substitute care programs, primarily residential treatment, subsidized guardianship, and other medical costs, and then the smaller adoptions-related programs, those programs have, for the most part, caseload growth, and the net effect of that, the $25.4 million general fund, was not included in the governor's budget. It's not included in the reshoot budget, and it's not anticipated to be funded in the Senate budget plan because they are not entitlement programs, and they're not mandated programs for the purposes of budget building.
Where am I supposed to be seeing the 25.4?
If you add up the general fund numbers for TANF, employment-related daycare, child safety, substitute care, and other adoption programs, that subtotal is $25.4 million.
So the 26,603 is not inclusive of the 165 in employment-related daycare support? I mean, is that how you get to a 20?
It is netted out of that. So there, for example, if you fully funded the employment-related daycare projected cases, costs, and staffing, you would actually have a little bit of administrative staff savings. And so the bottom line is a net number.
And that's 25?
Everything above the jobs program backfill issue, general fund cost is $25.4 million. I threw the jobs program backfill issue in there to confuse you. That is, however, another policy issue that I just wanted to have on the record. When in the reshoot budget they back out the $3.2 million in other funds limitation because of child care and development revenues that are not available, what the agency has indicated that if you backfilled that other funds limitation with general fund, that $3.2 million general fund cost would be partially offset this biennium by a $2 million savings in the TANF and ERDC program. And further, so that's the $1.2 million net cost for 0507 that's shown on that. Right above the 26.6 line. So the other piece of that is, even though that's a net $1.2 million cost projected for this biennium, they would project a $5 million general fund savings next biennium for that. So I wanted to make sure that issue was known to people as well. So, again, to summarize, none of the policy issues on page 3 here, or none of that program growth, is funded in the Senate plan based on what was funded in the governor's budget and the reshoot. The total amount is the $25.4 million for those caseload issues and then the backfill issue, the $1.2 million associated with the backfill issue.
Questions?
Just a comment, Madam Chair.
Yes.
If Senator Bates has only gone 5 minutes, I'd like to be gone 15.
You can't be serious.
No, I'm not serious.
I didn't think so. Any questions on this issue? Yeah, We're just talking about, we're not talking about the jobs program today in Southern Oregon. We're just talking about the jobs program associated with the Catholic, you know, children and families.
Right, children, adults, and families.
Okay.
Over time, the jobs program in children, adults, and families has taken some budget reductions. It takes some additional reductions in this budget.
Okay.
So what this would do would allow some of those, would allow the backfill of that child care and development fund revenue in the jobs program and produce some offsetting savings.
Okay.
So back on page 2, we talked about 24, 25, and 27 as part of the adjustments for the mandated caseload. Line 26, Substitute Care Independent Living Program, this is not mandated caseload, but it's federal money that's it's a federal grant that's identified to help get children in foster care who are aging out of foster care to help get them ready to live on their own. And although it's not a mandated program, it is 100% federal funds. This increase is 100% federal funds, and so I've recommended that that be added to the budget
as
well.
This is the one-time money that's kind of been accumulated over...
Madam Chair, Senator Westland, that's the vocational rehabilitation money on item 12. That's, we would consider it to be one time, that's sort of accumulated over time. The item 26, the independent living program, is an ongoing federal grant, and so it's not considered to be one time.
And this is for 17, 18, 19-year-old kids coming out of foster care trying to get to the point of being independent themselves, transition money. Is it adequate for the program?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, I think the agency would tell you they could serve a lot more of the older youth in foster care if they had more money to do it.
Well, I guess the question is what percent of the kids coming out of foster care, the older kids coming out of foster care, are truly in need of this service, and what percent of those are we serving? Can we serve with this $950,000? That's the real question.
Well, it's kind of a sad commentary. I got a lot of calls from the Portland area where there are groups that are trying to help with those kids at that age, and they're filling the streets more and more and more. So I'm glad that the department, even this much, is a start in the right direction. So I want to applaud you for that and hope that as opportunities come, that you will seek them so we can get more of our young people off the streets.
OPB had a long program about this. I watched at length, and these kids are really sort of dropped.
Right, they are.
And they come out of broken homes, multiple foster settings. A lot of them did not do well.
And on their birthday, 18th birthday, yes, depending on their level of stability, they're out. Yeah.
Okay, line 28 then relates to a package in the governor's budget that redirected criminal fines and assessment account monies. The governor's budget redirected that to the general fund, and those programs that were funded with that money were then funded with general fund in the governor's budget at a slightly reduced level. There was about a 10% cut. This reflects the Senate budget's proposal, well, Senate House, the legislative proposal to not accept the governor's direction relative to those criminal fines and assessment account monies, and backs out the fund shift so that the programs continue to be funded with CFAA monies. Line 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, and 35 are all program restorations. Both the House and the Senate budgets restore these items that were reduced in the governor's budget.
We came together?
Yes.
Yay!
In this program area.
Oh, okay.
Oh. All right. For those issues in this program area.
You're doing good.
So we've had discussion on these reductions in the Joint Human Services Subcommittee, and so I won't go into them in great detail here. Just to say, item 29 relates to TANF households with non-parents, with children being placed with non-parents. The proposal was to establish an income limit to qualify for TANF assistance, and that's being restored, so there would not be an income limit on that as proposed in the governor's budget. The second, item 30, the second restoration, the governor's budget would have limited the employment-related daycare to only people leaving TANF as opposed to other low-income people needing child care assistance. This restores $11.2 million general fund to basically leave the program policy in place as it is. Line 31, new people on employment-related daycare get a lower first-month copay, so basically a subsidy for the first-month copay while they're getting their feet under them as they're on the job. The governor's budget would have eliminated that. This plan restores that with $3.3 million general fund. The governor's budget cut TANF domestic violence by 15%. This restores that $2.1 million general fund. The vocational rehabilitation services reduction was partially restored in the reshoot. The special payments reduction was partially restored in the reshoot with $727,000. So this is the rest of that special payments restoration, so $1 million. General fund going back into that program, and you can see that it has a very favorable federal funds matching rate. So that will restore the special payments for services to where they were prior to the governor's budget.
Remind me again what's CareFlex?
Item 34, the system of CareFlex funds, Madam Chair. These are the flex funds that were put into place to provide individualized services to children in foster care. Based on an agreement with the Juvenile Rights Project. The governor's budget cut those flex funds about 60% from where they were. This restores much of that, not all of that. The governor's budget cut out $4.75 million general fund. This restores $3 million general fund. But it gets the total funds to about $8.7 million for the next biennium.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator.
Just an observation, I mean, to make everyone in the audience nervous. I mean, you add up those three line items that don't have federal match, and it's about $17 million worth of general fund. And that means we're leaving $25 million. That's just in these three line items. It means we're leaving about $25 million worth of federal funds on the table. And, you know, that's something we've got to look at. I'm not saying employment-related daycare isn't vitally important, but there's other vitally important areas of this budget that we're not maximizing federal revenues to help.
Such as Senator Lessman.
To what?
Example.
Healthcare.
We haven't added back one human being to the health plan.
Yeah, children back to that price.
Madam Chair, I would note the reason these are general fund restorations is that the TANF grant, which the department uses to pay for, obviously, TANF benefits, but also for employment-related daycare, the TANF grant and the Child Care and Development Fund that this department receives from Employment Department, those are not matching funds, they're capped federal grants. And so the part about not leveraging additional federal funds is because of the way that these grants are structured, and I'm sure that's part of the reason behind the fact, if you look at what's not funded in this budget, the TANF and employment-related daycare would be total 100% general fund restorations, and I'm sure that factored into the discussions about where the funding should go, both in the governor's budget and in the Senate budget.
Do we have a maintenance of effort here?
Madam Chair and Senator Westland, there is a maintenance of effort requirement both for TANF and Child Care and Development Funds, also for Vocational Rehabilitation Services. And with this, well, at the governor's budget level, there was a little flexibility in terms of the TANF maintenance of effort with the assumption that, for example, that there would be significant increases in the educational opportunity grants. So part of the maintenance of effort requirement it lies with what the Department of Human Services spends on its programs. Some of the maintenance of effort expenditures happen in other agencies, and so depending on what happens in the budget overall, we may or may not be okay. With these restorations, I believe we will be okay, even with reductions in the governor's budget in some areas, we will be okay on the TANF maintenance of effort. I think we will be very close to being okay on the Child Care and Development Fund maintenance of effort, although that has to be looked at a little more closely. And then with the restoration of the Vocational Rehabilitation Services special payments, we're okay on that maintenance of effort, and we weren't in the governor's budget initially.
Well, and I mean, for all those that are now starting to, you know, clog Senator Bates, that was Senator Bates who made that comment, all those that are starting to clog Senator Bates' fax and email, I'm not picking on ERDC. I'm making a general comment that we have not had the opportunity to sit down and comb these budgets and go through with an eye to not only public policy, but public policy with the eye of maximizing federal dollars, you know, to put into holes that are all over CAF and health services, statewide. But we have not had that opportunity. That's the only reason I bring this up. I'm not trying to pick on ERDC or this specific recommendation.
Okay, I think we're down at item 35. This is the restoration for the special rates foster care reduction. So the governor had proposed reducing those, I believe it was by 20%. This restores that. And there are matching funds associated with that one under the 4E foster care and adoption assistance program. I would just ask you to look now at this policy package summary again, the 090 package analyst adjustments. And you can see the restorations we just talked about on the additional LFO recommended adjustment line is about $27 million general fund. So even with these restorations, it only buys back about half of the governor's budget adjustments. And I just wanted to note for you what the remaining cuts are after the Senate budget plan actions. The first item we talked about already that's included in that number is the fund shift to reduce general fund by $3.4 million by using balances from the individual account, individual education account, and the law enforcement medical liability account. But there's $10.4 million in staffing costs related to the current service level budget that the governor's budget eliminated, and so that's part of what the Senate budget is not adding back. There's a $4.5 million reduction in the jobs program. There's a $3.6 million reduction in or delay or deferral or savings from delaying or deferring the cost of living adjustment, and $1.5 million reduction in abstinence program and community safety net general fund support. So those are all the general fund numbers, but I wanted to give you a summary of what is still remaining as unfunded based on what the governor's budget did initially. So back to line 36 on the long spreadsheet then. That line eliminates the governor's budget package for attorney general representation. And as we talked about, there is a recommendation for a special purpose appropriation of $2.5 million for that. And you can see that in the shaded area at the bottom of the page. Line 37 relates to the Senate budget plan, a 2% reduction in general fund services and supplies. And then the Senate plan also calls on line 38 for an additional six-month deferral of the cost of living adjustment for various DHS budgets so that there would be no cost of living adjustment until July 2006. And this is a much bigger number in this budget cluster than you saw yesterday in department-wide support services, the main reason being that cost of living adjustment affects not only services and supplies and contract services and that kind of thing that you would see in the department-wide support services budget, but this affects provider payments, client benefits. A significant amount of this cluster's budget goes out as special payments, and so the cost of living deferral will affect that as well as the operational expenditures, if you will, of the budget cluster.
Ms. Becker, who is the population in number 38?
This, Madam Chair, this affects all, both the department's internal operating expenses as well as special payments to providers, to clients. So foster care parents, to residential treatment providers, the TANF benefits, the child care providers that receive payments, all of those would be affected by this COLA deferral.
Madam Chair?
Senator Biggs.
I'm going to bounce back to what Senator Westland said. This is the sort of the flip on this. By cutting general fund here and cutting, well, actually delaying for a year a COLA to these people. And I remember taking testimony from these foster care parents, what they're going through. If I'm reading this correct, they were giving up about $6 million in federal funds. Is that correct? So we hold off giving these people their increased COLAs. And we'll lose $6 million in federal funds that would help pay for that. And it's just the flip side of what he was talking about earlier, but I think it's something we should note as we go through. And it goes back to this particular process we've gone through because of the splitting ways and means. We have not had an opportunity to ultimately look at the most important parts of the budget for DHS. We just lost that opportunity. We spent a huge amount of time early in session on other funds' budgets, and never got down to what I consider their own nitty-gritty of DHS. And now we're relying on an excellent staff to do the best they can under difficult conditions, the co-chairs, and trying to go through these budgets for us and not really vetting them as tightly as we'd like. It's too late, I understand, to do that now. I understand that. But I have to make that comment, and next session we will do better.
I appreciate that. Senator Westman.
Well, I'm not sure it's too late to vet these more than we have. I wouldn't say I agree with Senator Bates that it probably wouldn't be possible to vet them to the extent that they should be. But, I mean, just carrying that thought forward on the COLAs, I don't know what's gone on in any of the other clusters yet. But in terms of the independent living facilities and the opportunity centers, some of the residential treatment centers, I mean, their COLAs, it's the same point, and I don't think they've had an increase in 4 years.
Six years.
I mean,
for DDE population, it's been six.
The what?
For the developmentally disabled population of workers.
Exactly. I mean, there's it's just a serious issue, and hopefully we will be able to get the opportunity to at least look at that issue. And not to discuss it here, but I think it's something that needs to be highlighted. I mean, those certainly are matchable funds. Also, Madam Chair, if I could,
mm-hmm.
I noticed we've been joined by four very distinguished pages that did an excellent job on the Senate floor today from Senator Johnson's district. And I believe it is David, Eugene, Laura, and Kyle. You guys did a great job today, so we appreciate you being here. We don't know about that guy that brought you in. We don't know about him, but you guys did a great job.
Thank you. Make your serve. Ms. Becker?
Okay. So that wraps up the recommended adjustments that we would make to the governor's budget and the reshoot request for the agency. And so the totals are in the shaded area there in terms of the Senate preliminary budget. You can see that the combination of the preliminary budget plus the special purpose appropriation in general funds is about 2.4% above where the governor's budget was. And then in terms of total funds, it's about 3.9% above where the governor's budget was. So if there's no further questions on the numbers at this point, I'd ask you to look in the memos in term, and we can talk about the performance measures.
Can we just kind of do a couple minutes while you guys look at this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is TANF going to be renewed? Do we know that for sure?
Is TANF going to be renewed?
I missed some of the conversation, so is TANF
going to... We didn't talk about the reauthorization.
Do we know what's going to happen? Are you suggesting we...
Well, at some point it'll be reauthorized. Who knows, man? Right now it's continuing
resolutions. It's continuing resolutions then. Okay.
Oh, we're standing... Oh.
Mr. Johnson, can you join us again, please? Can you join us again? Will you join us again? Down to the, do you have a copy? Yeah. Are we back online?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Does he have a copy of that?
Yes.
Okay. So under your key performance measures, the bottom one, the last one on the list, the percentage of abused, neglected children who were re-abused within 6 months of prior victimization, how much better are we doing in this state, or how do you compare us, or you call your personal, okay, how do you compare us with, say, Washington, Idaho, similar size?
Madam Chair, let me allow Jim Neely to answer that question for you.
Madam Chair, member of the committee, Jim Neely, Deputy Assistant Director. We took a look at how we were doing at a point in time measure, and this is based on federal reviews that are done, the CFSR, Child and Family Services Review. In Oregon's review, we did 6.8%, Nevada was 7.6%, Idaho 9.3%, California 10.7%, Washington 10.8%, and Alaska 23.6%. So at least in terms of what's going on regionally, we're doing better than our sister states.
How does the 6.8 compare to national?
Madam Chair, I don't know what the national average is. The federal benchmark is 6.1, and so that's what the feds say we should be shooting for. And I would add that states uniformly did not pass on a CFSR. Now, it's not just this measure, but a collection of measures, and I don't know that there were no states that passed on this measure. We certainly can get that information for you.
What's the numerical, what's the actual number of kids that we lost in our state last year?
And Madam Chair, do you mean the number that were re-abused?
Child fatality.
Madam Chair, that's 8.
So it's much better than where we've been. That's what I really wanted to applaud you for that, because I'd heard that our numbers are down. Now, I do know, I don't mean to be insensitive, I do know anytime we lose one child, it's a sad thing, but we've done so much better, and I really, really wanted to put that on record for you guys, because I think that that you've been very good at meeting with foster parents and with parents, high-risk parents, and you brought that number down. So I appreciate that a lot. Any questions?
That's 8 within...
But 12 months. But when you're
year within our system, not just it happens.
Thank you very much. Any other questions?
Now, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I would just summarize that our recommendations on the performance measures are that the measures that relate to children, adults, and families, that the key performance measures stay the same. We did make some recommendations in terms of changing the target, and so that is what our recommendations pertain to.
So, do we? So, Can I have a motion in terms of the performance measures, if we're okay with those?
Madam Chair, I move the performance measures be adopted into Senate Bill 5600, specifically for the calf cluster.
Any objections? For the budget notes. Okay. Ms. Baker, would you take us to the budget notes?
Yeah. And today's Tuesday.
There are two budget notes. There are two budget notes related to children, adults, and families. Both of these have been added into other agencies' budgets, both the Senate and House co-chairs or Senate and House Budget Committee chairs have approved these. The first relates to the education benefits available to Jobs Plus program participants. We talked about the fact that the governor's budget and the Senate budget anticipate some funding shifting from that individual education account to offset general fund and Department of Human Services. The reason those funds are available is that the participants, the Jobs Plus participants for whom those funds were originally deposited, haven't used those benefits within the five-year time limit. And so the House Education Subcommittee identified that as an issue of concern to them and has this budget note that requires the Student Assistance Commission and the department to look at that issue in terms of how they can maximize Jobs Plus participants actually using those benefits. That would mean, of course, that you know if they are successful, there would be less money available in the future for these kind of transfers that are anticipated in this budget. But they were concerned that the money was not going as originally intended. So that's the first budget note. The second...
Madam Chair, my memory of this program was that these were very small amounts of money per client, so there's no way of the client to really assess, you know, to access the money. It would be for a short period of time when they left the job, there was money set up there for them to use, but it was such a small amount it couldn't be used. But in aggregate, it was $7 million. Was there any discussion? I mean, these people need more training. They need to go forward their education. Was there any discussion about putting this in the Oregon Opportunity Grant instead of putting it back in the general fund?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, I believe that in the current statute, if the funds go unused and aren't otherwise redirected, in fact, there is some direction that they go to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, not for the Jobs Plus clients, but for the Oregon Opportunity Grant. And so I'm not aware of all the discussion in the House Education Subcommittee, but the point that the budget note is trying to address is that whatever the problems may be in terms of clients using those, it's worthwhile to take a look at that and see if there's something that can be done to improve the originally intended use of those funds.
But I think this budget note addresses that. Senator, are you comfortable with that?
As long as we're not using it, if it goes into the opportunity grant, but doesn't get backfilled with the general fund pulling out the opportunity grant, then I feel comfortable. But what's really going on here?
Well, I suspect with the student commission being engaged here, if they won't have...
You'll watch that?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll leave it in good hands.
Senator Wessler.
Well, Madam Chair, just over Senator Bates' inarticulate objections, I was going to move the Jobs Plus budget note as reported by LFO into the budget narrative for Senate Bill 5600, CAF division.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion.
Thank you very much. Any objections?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The second budget note was added to the Employment Department's budget. It's asking Employment Department, Department of Human Services, and the Commission on Children and Families to look at the statutes and the program structure and how the money gets distributed relative to child care in Oregon, both the regulatory piece, which is in the Employment Department's purview, and then the services and subsidies that are provided there. And so the intention is to have people take a thorough look at that and then report to the substantive committees and the Joint Legislative Audit Committee during the interim and no later than fall 2006, with the idea being if there are statutory changes or budgetary changes that are recommended as a result of that, that then that would be timely to be integrated into the budget and the legislative process.
Discussion? Senator Bates?
So moved.
Any objections?
And so, Madam Chair, that concludes our review of the recommendations for this budget. We would suggest that you approve a preliminary budget with the numbers as we've outlined there. Again, with the understanding that that includes the $2.5 million special purpose appropriation to the emergency board and the potential, although we hope not the likelihood, that those numbers could shift slightly based on what happens in the health services and the seniors and people with disabilities budget discussions.
Would you like a motion, Madam Chair?
I would.
I move Senate Bill 5600 as reported by LFO to include the special purpose appropriation for the AG representation of $2.5 million to include the performance measures and two budget notes to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Objections?
No, Madam Chair.
Good work.
And I will get Doug Wilson.
Doug Wilson, you can come back now.
But can I leave now, Madam Chair?
No, you cannot.
Oh.
What was the number you moved for the general fund money?
Oh, where's the total
general fund? Is it 423 or 420?
It's 420 yeah. to the department, and then there's the $2.5 million special purpose appropriation.
Okay, that brings it up. Okay,
right.
Good. So we're not going to be...
422.5 with a...
423.
SPA.
Right, okay. Including
good. The... Good, that's fine. Matches up. Thank you.
I hope so.
I just want to make sure we didn't, you know, mouth my errors here.
Yeah.
No, really?
Yeah, ma'am. I'm not goofing. I'm not having it.
So, Julie, what's your answer on that? The flex money versus the COLAs?
Oh.
Just outside.
God! Gosh! Have you talked to those people?
No, but that would be my guess. It might be worthwhile asking.
It might be better to transfer the money from one to the other. You get a lot more bang for your buck. Who can you talk to in health care?
So, you guys.
I mean, what really gets more money to these kids is the question.
Okay.
Either through foster care rates or. Thank you. Okay. Did Weston know that?
I'm sorry,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, open the committee back for Senate Bill 704A relating to mental health drugs, public hearing and possible work session.
Madam Chair, in front of you is Senate Bill 704. I passed out a memo which presents information on the bill, the A. N. Gross version, which is in front of you. There is an amendment that has been worked on this morning that takes care of many, if not most, of those concerns. And just to quickly lay out what's in the bill, this bill requires DHS and the Department of Corrections to, as stated in the current form, to continue to prescribe to a person in an institution a mental health drug if the prescription specifies that no substitute is allowed. It applies to folks in all of DOC's institutions and work camps, as well as the State Hospital, Eastern Oregon Training Center, and Eastern Oregon Psych Center. There were some concerns raised regarding the liability of the agencies, because it limited their health licensed health professionals from reacting what they thought was the best judgment in prescribing. Cost was an issue in the current form of the bill, but I think the amendment takes care of those issues. And I still have some concerns, partially because I am not an expert on the Medicaid Modernization Act. I've asked Dr. Kitchen, who I think is still here, to be available for questions on how this may affect that as it comes down the line. But as I understand it, there's a lot of uncertainty around what that will end up looking like and the how that may impact this bill in the future. And in the bill itself, the Department of Corrections was concerned about the use of the term director, since the current director is not a licensed health professional. He is a lawyer. I'm not sure if you want lawyers prescribing drugs.
Oh, God, I don't think so.
But anyways, by chit, but the amendment also takes care of that issue. In the current form of 704-A, the Department of Human Services submitted information preliminarily in LFO's review of it, having a fiscal of about $168,000. DOC was indeterminate because there were a number of uncertainties in it in dealing with liability against both the agency and its employees and the effect on its formulary that they currently use, which does save them a considerable amount of money. I will pass out the amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And I am not sure. I do think that at least one of the agencies did want to testify. And I don't know if anyone else does. I did not get a testifying sheet out, and I apologize for that.
Thank you. The director and the director is joining us.
Tell me.
Yeah.
Not sure you have testimony. You do too.
Got your amendment. I agree.
Yeah. See, the one on the left is a temporary.
Gentlemen, you can decide who will go first.
Madam Chair, I'm
Mr. Age before handsomeness, is that it? Oh, I'm sorry, the reverse. Okay.
Madam Chair,
all is fair with old legislators. They don't go away. They don't die. They just slide away into another department. I'm sorry, keep going.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Brian Johnson, the interim director of the Department of Human Services, and I kindly referred to a moment ago as the temp, and then a moment after that as the old. So I'm feeling relatively ill-advised to speak for any length on this. So I will simply say that those folks who are quite knowledgeable at DHS have advised me that we have no problems with this bill.
Okay. Aren't you glad that Senator Weston isn't in here right now? And I know you are. Mm. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Max Williams, Director of the Oregon Department of Corrections. We have some written testimony which has been provided to the committee, but
yes,
in the long and the short of it, we appreciate having worked with committee staff, the folks at DHS, and also some of the private lobbyists who have an interest in this bill to have worked out our concerns and the Dash A8 amendments meet with our approval as well. We believe that it will allow us to do the evaluation that we need to do as people come into an institutional environment and allow that medication that they've been essentially prescribed to continue during the period of that evaluation, and then allow us the flexibility to adjust accordingly as our mental health professionals see fit in the best interest of the patient. And we feel comfortable that these amendments allow us to accomplish that.
Okay.
Well,
Dr. Bates?
Just a quick comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the work on this. People who are taking significant mental health drugs when they hit a new environment have an especially difficult time. The physicians who have written those prescriptions know those patients better than anybody else does, hopefully, at that point. As you become more acquainted with the patient under new conditions, you may well see your physicians change those prescriptions, and that's very appropriate and proper. So I appreciate that when the patient first comes into your jurisdiction, that they will be allowed to maintain those prescriptions until such time as you really feel you know the patient, and then you can with all due caution, make changes you see fit. So thank you for working with this bill with us. I think it's a very important one, especially to certain parts of our society which have spoken up on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else out here that would like to testify on this bill? I'm going to get Mr. Weston.
Now I'll get him out of here and get him in here.
Thank you, gentlemen, so much. And your people are to be applauded for working with us on this bill. Thank you a lot. Mr. Weston, how do you vote?
I vote absolutely.
What now?
Aye.
You need to give me a motion then.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm not sure if you vote in the work session, but I may have missed that.
I thought I did.
I came back
I
in.
I said possible work session.
I knew that.
Work session, 704.
Madam Chair, there you've opened the work session 704. The dash 8s are in front of you. Real briefly, subsection 8 or subsection 1 of the dash 8s provide that that doctors that are working under contract or employees of either DHS or DOC may write a prescription that that they can specify exactly what's in that prescription, and the dash 2s make a or do what or Senator Bates, excuse me, says that until the time that someone within the institution, a licensed health professional with prescriptive privileges, reviews and evaluates the person, that the drugs as the prescriptions as the client or inmate comes in must be used. Our only concern is more long term in nature, as certain formularies may be figured with the MMA or Medicare Modernization Act. We worry a little bit that some of the costs could potentially be transferred to the state, but at this time for the 0507 biennium, the fiscals here are either zero or very minimal.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, would you entertain a motion?
I will, sir.
Make a motion that Senate Bill 704, as the dash 8s are amended, be report out to...
No, you move the dash 8 into 704.
Okay. Move the dash 8 to 704 first, Madam Chair.
Oh,
can't do it in one shot, can I? It'll take forever.
Any objections? So moved. So. Dr. Bates?
Madam Chair, we now move the Senate Bill 704 as amended, dash 8, to the special subcommittee or special committee on budget. Senate, please. We do pass recommendation. If the good senator to my right... Bills, that's perfect parliamentary procedure.
Are there any objections?
Well, I believe you call for discussion first.
Discussion.
And my only question is, whose bill is this anyway?
Why does it matter?
You want to talk to Senator Gordley about this?
Oh, I thought it was Margaret's bill.
No.
You want to talk to Avell? This is a very good bill.
Thank you. A wise choice of words.
If it's Margaret's bill, I'm not so sure, but.
Yeah.
Any objections? So moved. Any further comments? You guys are okay.